And welcome into the Friday edition of Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road. Nick Frazier here with you on this Friday morning. Hope everybody is doing well. Joe Rex Road fresh off a Janet Jackson concert last night. Feeling groovy this morning.
Yeah, that was great. Great show by Janet Jackson. Ludacris, nice opening act. And because the checking the scores, like, okay, do I have to bail? Do I have to find a TV? The Warriors blew out the Lakers, so I was like, you know what? I can just take the night off from worrying about the Warriors.
Yeah.
There you go.
I mean, for the first, I don't know, 12 minutes of the game, first quarter of the game, looked like the Lakers may be on their way to another win, and that quickly changed after that, very quickly changed. Golden State looked pretty good last night.
Those Clay games.
Yeah.
You get Clay going, and it's just, pack it up, man.
Yeah, they just showed it on TV. He hit one, a three, like, over LeBron in the second quarter to start things off. And I was like, all right, he's feeling it tonight. And when he starts feeling it, like you said, that changes things. Janet Jackson in town this week. Taylor Swift in town all weekend long. The Swifties are invading Nashville this week. They're expecting – I saw a number. I don't know where they get these numbers from. But somebody said that like the city of Nashville is expecting like 400,000 people this weekend or something like
that. Yeah, 400 something. Yeah. Yeah, the hotel prices are skyrocketing and I was asked today. I hope she forgets about it. But she was like, "Do you think you could go to the merch line right after the show?"
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, "Really?
That line won't be long."
I mean, it's like maybe early in the morning, it won't be bad because I've seen pictures of the merch line.
All I know is people were lining up apparently like yesterday at 2:30 in the morning for the merch line.
That's right.
Yeah.
See,
which just boggles my mind. It's merch.
Yeah, like look, it's already this is Taylor Swift in her prime. I'm sure the show's amazing. So ticket prices are crazy, but I get that, you know, to a point, right?
Yeah.
But the desperation to have the specific merch. No one's gonna like in a few years. It could have been a concert, this concert, this tour. It could have been something that you ordered online for $12.99. But we have to get in line for this, like authentic. Are these like verified like Twitter?
Yeah,
you know?
Maybe
like
so.
Verified merchandise. Why is it so important?
I just know that like if I owned a dress shop around here the last couple of weeks, I'd be feeling pretty good. Like my wife and like all of her friends that are going to this thing, new dresses. For some reason, this is a thing with Taylor Swift. And I was like, it's a concert. What are we doing? It's an outdoor concert where it may be raining.
I know. Believe me. I feel the pain from the mall and the, you know, 8 pounds of lamb meat that then ensued. So I don't get it either, man. But you know what?
But shout out to Taylor Swift for coming back home tonight. There we go.
No, I'm sure the show is going to be great.
I'm sure it'll be great.
Enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show out there, everyone, if you're going. Nick Frazier, good morning. How are you? Nick Frazier, our resident St. Louis Cardinals fan, already giving up on the season with a 10-22 start for the St. Louis Cardinals, and I'm sure everybody around here feels really sorry about.
I have lost hope in the Redbirds, the birds on the bat. You know, I really thought they'd start out better. Obviously, they didn't want to, you know, go for pitching in the offseason, and that has now hurt them tremendously. But overall, besides that, I'm doing quite well. Got a smile on my face. Nice day outside. I mean, hey, can't complain.
Sure, it really breaks people up around here that the Cardinals aren't doing well.
There's a pretty good Cardinals.
There's a Cardinals fan base, right?
Collection around here.
They've had a lot of success.
Yes. Yes, they absolutely. Very consistent.
We got a lot to get to on the program today. Jared Stillman joining the show at 7 o'clock, so looking forward to that. Teron Davenport at 8 o'clock for his thoughts on the Tennessee Titans. And speaking of the Titans, Joe, we learned, and I think, you know, it was reasonable to expect some changes as you go from Todd Downing to Tim Kelly, but with Chig Okonkwo speaking a couple days ago and certainly Ryan Tannehill speaking a couple days ago, it sounds like there could be some pretty significant changes to the Titans offense from a terminology standpoint, maybe from a concept standpoint, to the way they want to do things, and that may not be the worst thing in the world given the way the Titans offense has operated the last couple of years, last year specifically. So as you look at not only the personnel that they now have and the revamped offensive line and all those things that we've talked about, but Tim Kelly coming in and what we've learned now in the last couple of days from Chig Okonkwo and Ryan Tannehill, what does a different Titans offense look like in your mind as you start to look at Tim Kelly and maybe the ideas that he's got bringing to the table? What do you think this offense could look like here as they move forward?
It's a great question. It was a little surprising to hear some of the comments about how significant the changes sound like they're going to be. You know, the most specific example was Chig kind of talking about using tempo more. I asked Tannehill about that specifically, and, you know, he sort of said, yeah, that's part of it, but it's just the idea of putting more pressure on the defense. What does that mean? I mean, everybody wants to do that, right? So I guess my big question would be, is this just another variation of the offense they've had? Because, you know, you can still have different plays, different terminology, all that stuff within, like, the Shanahan is what I call it, you know, basically like the modern Shanahan offense, or, you know, outside zone. I mean, it's like, this is the offense that Matt LaFleur brought with him from the Los Angeles Rams. It's the same offense. Or is it actually going to be like a different offense? Is it going to be more like what we saw Houston run when Tim Kelly was there? That was super heavy shotgun.
Yep.
But, I mean, I look at that offense as, you know, more built around Deshaun Watson than anything. So, I don't know what it's going to be, but it's a really interesting idea. And if I'm a Titans fan, I like hearing anything on that side of the ball is going to be way different. It is, just, if it's different, worth a shot, okay? You know, big question, of course, is Tim Kelly – on Sundays, you know, during the week and on Sundays, game plans and play calling and all that, is that going to be significantly better than Todd Downing?
Well, you brought up something yesterday that I guess I've not really thought about a ton, and it was more in relation to the conversation of, like, Ryan Tannehill and the year that he is going to have specifically to have a future in this league as a starting quarterback. But I do wonder, even, like, especially with the personnel being what it is right now, and we know the shortcomings at wide receiver that this group has. But if this offense goes out there and, you know, maybe they're not top 10 or anything like that, but they're significantly better than they were a year ago, how much are we just going to simply look back over the last couple of years? And, you know, we can talk about A.J. Brown and we can talk about all these other things that are all valid. But how much are we just going to simply look back and say, man, Todd Downing was an awful hire at offensive coordinator if Tim Kelly comes in and things get significantly better?
Yeah, I think first of all, people love doing that. People really want to do that, right? They really want to believe that whoever just left, it was all of the problem, you know?
Right.
Again, it's like J-Rob. J-Rob made all the bad choices. All the decisions that were bad were J-Rob, and then the good ones, maybe Vrabel, like, you know, talked him into those. You know, that's what right. You want to believe.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that's a possibility. And like, again, I don't think Downing was great by any means. I think he had limitations. But Kelly has limitations too. So if Kelly takes similar limitations, now, if Kelly has a much better offensive line, he'll look like a much better offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
But, yeah, look, I mean, Downing, 3 seasons of evidence – lots of other factors around him that were not great. If you're Todd Downing or in Todd Downing's family, you can sit here and say, give me what Arthur Smith had in 2020 one time.
Right.
And let me show you what I can do. But you know what? Didn't happen. And hey, even through all last year and the 2 years and everything that went on, he's still hireable. So that's good. But yes, I think that it may be that where it's Arthur Smith. That's what Titans hope is. It's Arthur Smith, Tim Kelly, and then you had the couple bad years in between. That's also, I mean, that's on Vrabel. If that's the case, that's on Vrabel for making that hire. Great instincts with Arthur Smith, not so much with Todd Downing.
Well, it's interesting, too, because, you know, going back to the offense, I think when people hear different, they think, okay, does that mean that they're going to, quote-unquote, modernize the offense and throw the ball a little bit more and do all those things? And I hear that. I don't know that I think different necessarily means throwing the ball way more, like the Titans are all of a sudden going to become like some gunslinging team where they throw the ball 40 times a game. And quite frankly, if that was their approach, I think a lot of Titans fans would want to see that. But I don't think that's a good idea based on the personnel that they've got at the moment. Right. Like the more that you could hand the ball to Derrick Henry, and you know you're going to need to throw the ball obviously to Treylon Burks and Kyle Phillips and the guys you have. But the Titans don't have the horses right now to just turn back and throw the ball 45 times a game.
Right. I mean, you don't have the horses in the passing game to do that, and also you have a running back who, if he's on your team and he's making that much money, and he's still that effective as a weapon, and you know that he basically needs carries, then yeah, I think you're going to keep giving him the ball. That whole thing, like this Vrabel 1983, it's like I think it's personnel related. One, you got a really good player, give him the ball. Two, especially last year, can't drop back, can't set up, can't get open. So is that philosophy or is that not being capable of being balanced? You got to be balanced.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. We're off and running today here on Robbie and Rex Road discussing the Titans offense. They've hinted to some changes, both Chig Okonkwo and Ryan Tannehill a couple of days ago. What would you like those changes to be? What do you make of the idea of the Titans changing up their offense? We'll take your thoughts. 615-737-1025. More on that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. We are live from our 1025 The Game studio. Brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Robbie and Rex Road presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. Call TJ's team to see why they're referred to so often. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Frazier here with you on this Friday morning. So it looks like the Titans could be changing up their offense and changing up their terminology. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. So I look at that and the idea of tempo, if that's the way they decide to go a little bit more often, I think could be good. You know, it's clear the offense, regardless of if you blame 100% of what we saw last year on Todd Downing, if you think Todd Downing deserves some of the blame, as we know, that conversation got a little bit out of control at times last year. I think all of us could probably agree that it was time for a fresh look for this offense and for somebody else to be in charge of the offense. And now Tim Kelly's going to get that opportunity coming in here. And, you know, it's, I guess, quote-unquote, an internal hire, given the fact that he was on the staff last year. But I do think, and we talked about this when they made the hire, like that doesn't mean that everything's just going to be the same. Like Tim Kelly was an offensive coordinator before, and things are going to be different as he takes over the job now. You know, he's got a different offensive line to work with, all those things. We've talked about receivers. But I do wonder, like, how many of the philosophies that we saw in Houston are going to be a part of this offense, and how much of it is going to be totally different? Because the one thing that I always want out of an offensive coordinator is, how do you look at what you have offensively and maximize what that is? In Houston, if you want to go out of the shotgun every snap and throw it 45 times when you've got DeAndre Hopkins and Deshaun Watson, knock yourself out, man. That makes a whole lot of sense. Probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense here in this offense. So how good will Tim Kelly be at formulating an offense that can move the ball, can score points, and maybe Joe score some points in the second half this year? That'd be great too.
Right, second half points. And, you know, the thing is, now Downing's first year, remember Vrabel got asked about Downing because, you know, after that Cincinnati game, Tannehill was, I guess, public enemy number one, but Downing was, you know, 2-1A, 1B.
Yep.
1A and 1B, probably number two.
Probably two.
And I'm not saying that he was number two. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
The game performance was, basically. But, you know what I'm saying. But Vrabel, at that point, you know, pointed out red zone, pointed out third down, right? Pointed out some of the stats that do speak to competence at OC and are important. And, I mean, everything eroded last year. Why did it erode? Did Todd Downing get dumber? You know, I don't think he was great. I don't think he's great. You can do better than him. But those are the stats. You know, third down efficiency. The red zone has been that's kind of been a thing. Really, the red zone for the Titans, even going back to Malarkey, which has nothing to do with this discussion, but I'm just saying, like, they've had good red zone. Like, Mariota was really good in the red zone here. They need to get back to that, obviously. You gotta finish drives with touchdowns. I mean, last year, it's like, how many drives did they even have that were promising enough to finish in touchdowns? Yeah, there was a lot of problems. Right. But, yeah, the second half scoring thing. And we talked about it 8,000 times last year. It's – I mean, like Peyton Manning – I was so happy that Peyton Manning said that whenever he said on the Manning cast. Like, we go into the locker room, like, go to the bathroom, we go back out. Yeah, it's like halftime adjustments. I mean, it's such a like a sports cliche that really isn't rooted in it. Like your adjustments are constant.
You got a PowerPoint presentation at halftime. Like, hey guys, yeah, exactly. We put this together, and let me tell you this.
Yeah, all
right. Not going well.
Brand new game plan. Sit down. All right, pay attention. Get off your phones. Yeah, I mean it is. Look, bottom line, if you're that bad after halftime, why is that? I mean, I'd say after halftime, you're getting out adjusted. You're getting out coached or whatever. Like, the Titans are built, or have been built for Derrick Henry to start crushing defenses in the fourth quarter. That's the whole idea of giving him these carries, right? And it wasn't happening last year. So, there's a lot. But like you said, it's about taking your personnel, maximizing it. And, hey, I mean, whatever the offense is, I mean, I still think it's going to be, like, there's going to be heavy outside zone in this offense. It's going to, I think a lot of the plays are going to look the same. Can you run well enough to make the play action better? Can you, you know, convert in the key situations? And, yeah, can Tim Kelly have a feel? Arthur Smith had a feel, right? He set defenses up and hit them with stuff. And he just – you got the sense – it's hard to put your finger on it, but you just got the sense that he was kind of in control of the game. Did not get that sense with Todd Downing. Not too often. I mean, when some of his trick plays work, like at Green Bay, he looked a lot better.
Yeah.
But obviously he had the opposite of good feel with some of his plays that he would put in a given week.
Well, and, you know, can you block well enough to really get to some of this offense too? Like, that's the other part at the end of last year. I mean, when you had Dennis Daly starting at left tackle – you can draw up a lot of plays, but when, I mean, it's the Ole blocking technique last year to end the season with Dennis Daly back there, and your quarterback's flat on his back a second and a half into his drop back. I mean, there's not a whole lot of offensive coordinators that can overcome that.
Yeah, no. And the thing is, it's even with all this, and you throw in, you hire, you know, Josh Dobbs and throw him right in there, and you still, like, you were in position to win at Jacksonville, win the division.
Yeah.
But that's with still a meager amount of offense.
Chad from Chattanooga on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, over-under that we see a Levis Tebow jump pass wildcat package with an eye roll emoji. This is from Chad from Chattanooga on the text line.
Sure.
Is he going to jump pass? I mean, the jump pass kind of feels like it's Derrick Henry's thing.
Yes.
He's done it, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. The jump pass to Corey Davis. Bad read because Mariota was wide open.
He was.
But,
I mean, Derrick Henry's had Tannehill wide open on one of those before, too.
Yeah, that's
he
right.
Just kind of leaves the – doesn't even look the quarterback's way.
Yeah, yeah. He's got to get better going through his progressions. But look, with Levis, whenever he plays, and I know we're going to talk about that at some later today, but certainly, I think, you know, the QB run element is there, you know. It's something that certainly getting him on the move and things like that can be effective. I mean, it is with Tannehill too, but I feel like as things have progressed, you know, you've got to protect the guy. That's probably going to still be the priority with Levis, but you can do some of that stuff with him, and I mean, he is, when he's healthy, there's a difference in the 21 and 22 film.
Yep.
Is if you watch Levis in 21, you're like, oh, this guy's got juice running the football.
How important offensively is what they do next year really related to Chig Okonkwo from this standpoint? Like, we saw, obviously, what he can do with the ball in his hands. He's a big weapon for the Titans, and I think it would be very smart to get him the ball as often as possible next year. But I think we also saw that it took him a while to earn the trust of the coaches to be in there more often than just obvious passing downs. So, you know, Vrabel talked about that at the end of last season of, you know, he's got to continue to improve that way, but also they have to get less predictable. Like, you can't telegraph what you're doing out there when, you know, Jeff Swaim is trotting out there and you know that they're running the ball, like, or if Chig Okonkwo is trotting out there, you know that they're throwing the ball. I mean, he didn't say it exactly in those terms, but talked about being less predictable. How important is Okonkwo's growth specifically just in that area to have some of that unpredictability, but also just to get him out on the field more and have a threat out there?
Yeah, it's very important. He talked about it the other day. I thought he looked a little bigger too. I don't remember if anybody asked him that. I don't think they did. That was a mistake.
Too busy asking about Aaron Brewer, and he's 290.
Yeah, exactly. Forgot to ask Chig. Kaharski was too busy screaming about somebody tweeting about it from 3 miles away. But that's hugely important for sure. He's got to be able to be in every situation. So that's a really interesting thing to watch. If you have that, and then you have a Swaim role filled by a more talented rookie in Wiley, then those two tight end sets can be, you know, that can be a nice look for you. A lot of versatility out of that.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm interested to see, too, I mean, with Wiley coming in, but also with Okonkwo there, like, how much better does he look this year? Because, you know, we talked about the Jonnu Smith comparison before, right? And, you know, even early on in Jonnu Smith's career, you could see, like, he caught the ball, and you could see the after-catch ability, and you're like, oh, okay, might have something here. But it took him a while to kind of round out his game. And then when he did, by the time that last year he was here in Tennessee, and he was really important. What did he have, like 8 touchdowns that year? I mean, he was really important to what they did.
Oh, yeah.
Can Okonkwo get to that? And maybe, you know, from a physical ability standpoint, does he have the chance to maybe even surpass what Jonnu Smith was in his last year here with the Titans? I don't know, but it'd be good to see that.
I mean, he's never going to be like Jonnu Smith as a nightmare to tackle.
Yes.
That's where it was. And also, like, again, every once in a while they throw him in the backfield and it's like, holy cow. I mean, he's not going to be the physical presence, but I think he might be a little bit quicker, you know, and I think he's a little bit quicker out of his cuts and things like that. And so I mean, that's where I feel like in the red zone, he could be a heck of a weapon. So he's just, and look, just going back to last year from the time he arrived, yeah, he's one of those guys, you're like, yeah, this guy's just going to keep getting better and better, you know, like he's got the intangibles they look for, which is part of why they got him, and that's a heck of a value. If they get another value like that out of the next Maryland guy they drafted, then Mike Locksley should get like some kickback for you know what the Titans are doing here.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we're going to switch gears and get into the college athletic side of things, including a wild story coming out of the University of Alabama. We'll begin with that, and we'll also take a look, maybe a way too early look at college football next year. Lots of noise on Alabama as well. Are they in for a downturn under Nick Saban? We'll get to all that coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. A wild story going on down with the Alabama baseball team right now. Baseball coach Brad Bohannon fired yesterday amid a widespread investigation into suspicious betting activity on their game against LSU 6 days ago. I guess now at this point, 7 days ago, last week. He gets fired yesterday. The suspicious activity, or alleged suspicious activity, took place Friday at the sportsbook at the Great American Ballpark, according to the Ohio Casino Control Commission. This is coming from ESPN.com. The OCCC's investigation centered on two bets on the Tigers to win from the same unidentified customer. Multiple industry sources told ESPN. A source familiar with the investigation told Pete Thamel there's no reason to believe any student-athletes are involved. Alabama's scheduled starting pitcher Luke Holman got scratched before the game due to back tightness, and he got replaced by a sophomore who hadn't started since March the 16th, and obviously LSU won that game. But the, you know, allegations are that whoever was making these bets, according to sportsbook surveillance video, was communicating directly with Bohannon at the time. This is what has been told through ESPN as well. So obviously he's been fired, and that's a huge deal. We've talked about like gambling in sports. And, you know, we've seen several different examples of that over the years throughout a couple of different sports. But now Brad Bohannon right at the center of this thing at Alabama and has been fired. By the way, Alabama played Vanderbilt last night and beat Vanderbilt in the first game of the series in the aftermath of all this. But Brad Bohannon out for a gambling scandal down in Alabama.
Yeah, it's wild. And you can look at this two ways. One, it's like, man, gambling's everywhere. It's all over the place, and now look at this stuff. Look at this mess, you know. It appears that a coach, One thing that I'd like to know is it like, was it like, okay, the player was legitimately hurt, so he just knows, okay, well, the back tightness is the back tightness, and so now we're going to have a problem, so yeah, put this bet down. Or like, I mean, I'm assuming that's it, as opposed to,
hey, you're not pitching today.
Yeah, are you sure your back isn't hurt? You know, but regardless, I'd love to know, one, like the size of the bet or the bets, you know, because obviously they must have been huge to trigger all this stuff.
Yeah.
So it's man, it's a mess. Also, you could look at it and say, see, this is, there's something good about having everything out in the open like this and regulated like this, because in the old days, if it's just, you know, someone tell your bookie, yeah, go ahead and go to your bookie and put a big chunk of change down. I mean, the bookie could call his own investigation if he wants, or not take the bet, right?
Right.
I mean, we do have this, we have oversight now, so there's something to be said for that. Look, I mean, going way back, you can go back to the Boston College point shaving scandal of the 70s, which was part of, you know, the Lucchese crime family and in the movie Goodfellas. I mean, like, stuff like this, there's little glimpses that come out publicly. I think there's a whole lot more that it will never see the light of day. So in a way, I look at this and say, okay, here, everybody here, check this out. Like, you will be found out. It's just, for Bohannon, he just flushed his career down the toilet. Yeah. I mean, unbelievable.
Well, and, you know, obviously this is not the first story we've seen on this front over the course of the past couple of years. I mean, Calvin Ridley got suspended an entire year for betting. You know, the Lions players that we talked about, with Jameson Williams being suspended to start as well. I said it back at the Calvin Ridley thing. You know, when the information was gathered on Calvin Ridley, I think it came out finally that I guess he had bet on the Falcons to win, which I said at the time, and I still stand by, is like, I don't care about that. Like, if you're betting on yourself to win, whatever. That it doesn't bother me.
Right.
But this is why the NFL comes down so strong on that, and why you have to come down so strong on that, is because it's not always teams or players betting on themselves to win.
Right.
And this was not the case.
And obviously, you go back to, you know, Pete Rose, recent Preds guest, Pete Rose, and all the question about betting against them at times, things like that. I mean, that's the thing. Speaking of oversight, like the NFL, I mean, Jameson Williams was betting, like, did something else, but he just was, like, on their Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
So he gets six games.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't even betting on football,
right?
You know? So, I mean, I think it's good. I mean, as hypocritical as it is, particularly with the NFL, when you think about some of the things people have done and get nothing for,
right?
And now it's like, oh, Jameson Williams put a $5 bet on a hoops game on the Lions' Wi-Fi, so
missing six games.
I mean, it's ridiculous, but I'm glad that there are mechanisms to watch this stuff.
Trent on the text line says, I would think if there was some sort of scandal involving a game or a player, that they would lock out that game from betting. William from Madison says, sounds like he was betting against his own team. Even Pete Rose didn't do that. This is from William from Madison on the text line.
We are sure that Pete Rose never did that?
I don't know that we're sure on that. I'd have to go back and look. Honestly, it's been so long since I've actually read the Pete Rose story.
Yeah. I thought that there was some question about that. But if there is a huge Reds fan out there who knows Pete Rose's entire history, that isn't.
Oh, just ask him next time he's in Preds locker.
That's true. And he'll be like, hey, guys, maybe you guys should win more.
Thanks, Pete. Appreciate it. Still, my favorite part of that was the Preds players like, hey, big fan. It's like, really?
Yeah.
You guys are all
huge
22
fan
years old.
Of you. Man, you and I used to watch you and Johnny Bench and Joe Morgan. It was amazing 20 years before I was born.
Hey, big fan. Just awesome. Awesome stuff there. But yeah, no, what a situation this is now in Alabama with Brad Bohannon. And like I said, they came out and they played Vanderbilt last night and won. So Vanderbilt in the midst of a series with Alabama down there in Tuscaloosa while all this is going on, and we'll keep you updated on that. But Alabama, at least on the field last night, the players responding and taking down Vanderbilt. So we'll see what happens on the rest of that weekend series. Joe, the college football world is buzzing after spring football has now come and gone. And there's a lot of chatter right now on Alabama. So the spring game comes, and you know how much I love spring football here on the program, but lots of people in the immediate aftermath of the Alabama spring game were looking at quarterback with, you know, Jaden Milroe down there and Ty Simpson, who we talked a lot about in his recruiting process, and said, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know if Alabama's going to be very good this year when it comes to the quarterback position. Now, we know that more than likely there's probably going to be a pretty severe drop-off when you go from Bryce Young to whoever is going to be your quarterback, but some concern on the Alabama front that maybe they're getting left behind right now. Now, the recruiting continuing to go very well for Alabama, and The Athletic came out with their way too early top 25 yesterday. Stuart Mandel put it out there. He's got Alabama at number 6 behind, I believe, Georgia's at 1, LSU 2, Michigan 3, USC 4, and Ohio State 5, Alabama at number 6. Do you buy into the maybe the glory days of the Alabama dynasty being behind us at this point?
No, but I do buy that this team, if you got a quarter, you know, sometimes you have those in between years at quarterback. You bring in Tyler Buchner from Notre Dame,
yep,
who wasn't good. It's like, okay, is that a depth ad? Is that a, oh crap, we don't have a quarterback ad?
Yeah.
I don't know, but Milroe, I don't know, man. He seemed a long way away last year, and I just have no idea what to think with Simpson. I mean, obviously Tennessee wanted him a lot, but
he's a 5-star, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything,
right? So if that's not great, their defense, you lose Will Anderson, and they got like 6 first round picks in their defense, you know. So Justice Haynes is the early enrollee who's supposed to be ridiculous, but you know the receivers were not great last year. That's part of the reason. For me, like, you compare Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud, I think in a few years it won't be close. But Bryce Young made do with actually a pretty bad receiving core, especially by Alabama recent standards. Well, huge drop-off from recent. And then Stroud had ridiculous pros all over the field, which Ohio State will have again. So, yeah, look, outside of the top 5 for Alabama, you are not used to seeing that. But I get it. I mean, USC – USC has gone heavy in the portal to help Caleb Williams. And, you know, I mean, Michigan brings back a lot on offense in particular. Michigan's offense looks ridiculous. So I get it. And Tennessee's looking good. Tennessee moves up in Stewart's from his last ranking.
Yeah. So. Moving up. And, you know, lots of intrigue about Joe Milton out there and what that's going to mean for Tennessee's offense. And it got me thinking yesterday, could this Tennessee team be as good or better than last year's Tennessee team, who went 11-2 and won the Orange Bowl? We'll get into that coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. More of your thoughts on our phone and text line as well coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Make sure you join 1025 The Game for the second annual Music City Celebrity Golf Tournament presented by Gary Ford's Acura, benefiting Souls for Souls, coming up on June the 7th at Hermitage Golf Course. You can put your team together and come play with athletes, musicians, and other local celebs to support a great cause and have loads of fun. Plus, you'll have the chance to win awesome prizes as well. You can sign up to play, sponsor, or donate at thegamenashville.com/golf. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Nick Fraser here with you. We'll have Jared Stillman coming up at 7 o'clock. So looking forward to that. Adam from Portland on the text line says, Alabama has to pay the success tax with the rest of the world. You win and we get to hate you. That's the tax. You'll always be good now, but along with the Patriots and Georgia and Golden State and every other true dynasty, no one loves you except the people in that area code. Boo Saban. Saban sucks. This is from Adam in Portland on the text line. Thank you, Adam. We appreciate it.
Well, who does Adam hate more, Kentucky or Alabama?
It's a good question. I would hope Alabama, but it's a good question.
Tennessee won, though, so isn't there less hatred now? Got the win. Got the dub.
I mean, you know how many times they beat Kentucky in the last 4 years?
That's true. It's run of the mill. See, it's not as fun to say that without Michelle.
It's not.
Hopefully she's listening.
Yeah. Hope you're enjoying yourself. 615-737-1025. So we're looking at Stuart Mandel's top 25 rankings in college football heading into the year. We've told you Alabama's at number 6. Tennessee moving up. into the top 10. They are number 10 in the preseason rankings for Stuart Mandel heading into the year. We know the changes. Joe Milton taking over as quarterback. You've got Jalin Hyatt and Cedric Tillman out as well, but a wide receiving core that still could be pretty darn good for Tennessee. And really the question next year, beyond the obvious of Joe Milton and how he's going to play, is how much better could the defense be for Tennessee next year? And that's really where I'm going with this. Like, let's say there's obviously a scenario where Joe Milton comes in and doesn't play well, or at least doesn't play anywhere near as well as Hendon Hooker played, and your offense suffers because of it, and that could be the most likely scenario. We'll see what happens on that front. The offensive line, I think, is a big question for Tennessee right now. But let's say those things work out, and Joe Milton plays well. You figure out the offensive line enough to the point where it's good. I like the three backs that they have. I like their receiving core. I like a lot about Tennessee's offense. If the defense gets significantly better next year, what do you think that could mean for this team? And is there a chance in your mind that next year's team actually could be better than last year's Tennessee team that broke down the door and revitalized this program?
Well, I don't think it's impossible. And I do think it's possible the defense is better. You know, you got some continuity with the coaching. You got some young players who are promising. You got some veterans returning. That's the whole thing. It's like you got a lot of veterans returning in the secondary, and so that's good or bad. You know, I mean, you've got competition there at least. So to me, it's like, man, you would think that you'd be able to. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I think Danico Slaughter is a really good player. I like him a lot. I think he's a guy who is going to take a step and be, you know, someone you notice consistently, you know, as a guy who makes plays. You know, they lose Byron Young. I mean, that's a big loss, yep. Right? But I'd also think, I think Aaron Beasley is a guy who
plays like he did in the Orange Bowl. He may be an All-American next year.
Yeah, he's a really good player, you know. And people are going to get excited about, even Mandel, he mentions Arian Carter. Who knows? I mean, maybe he will come in. I'm always skeptical. I feel like next year we'll talk about Arian Carter, and then people will be on to the next freshman. It's like, but see, now Arian Carter's now had a year. Now he's ready to be a difference maker. But, you do have a lot. Amari Thomas and Barron and Harrison. To me, it's always good to have guys like that. Simmons, who, by the way, very good national anthem the other day.
Yeah, I saw that.
The guy that I know a lot of people were talking about at the Orange Bowl, who they think could really have a big year, as Joshua Josephs. So again, the year after last year was like Pierce and Josephs, and you saw something, but now is when you look for those guys. It's amazing the amount of I forgot they still have Terry, DeJon Terry. They have Tyree West. They got a lot.
A little bit of depth now.
They got depth up front, which is great. I think at linebacker again, Beasley, like you said. I think Herring's a pretty good player. But it's that secondary. What's the combination? Is Gabe Judy-Lally going to be a big factor? The former Vanderbilt Commodore? Maybe. So he was what? He was out at BYU, right?
Yep.
BYU and now back over? Maybe. I don't know. That's where you'd love to see, because sometimes you have a talent, a freshman at like corner, great. You can come right in and help. You'd love to see one of those young guys jump in and push to play. Not that the other guys can't get better, but I feel like the talent level there still isn't good enough. And look, it is tough to play defense with that offense on the other side. It just is.
Yeah, no question. With the pace that they go and how quick they like to go, you're out there a lot.
It's hard to practice.
Yeah.
Unlike a lot of other teams when that's the offense with the ones.
The reason that I think they've got a chance to be pretty good is I still really like their receiving. The offense itself, I think we've learned enough about Josh Heupel through 2 years at Tennessee to know that he's pretty good at creating matchups and maximizing what they've got offensively. I think we've seen that to this point. But, with Brew McCoy coming back and Squirrel White, what he did toward the end of last year. You've got, you know, Ramel Keaton out there as well. I mean, right now I would guess that's probably your starting three that you're going with if you're Tennessee. Like, I think that's a pretty darn good starting three that they got. And I know they lost Hyatt and Tillman, but McCoy coming back I thought was a big deal. And I think Squirrel White's going to be – he's going to put up some monster numbers next year if Joe Milton is accurate with the ball.
Yes. Squirrel is going to be good. Yeah, I mean, Brew McCoy – I could see him taking another step, too. I'm really interested with Dante Thornton to see, like, what – because he – I mean, the speed is unquestionable. But Josh Heupel likes that rotation. He likes to stick with, like, pick three, and they get most of the work. So, because, you know, look, there's other guys. Webb is talented. And of course, again, everybody's going to talk about Nathan Laycock. I get it. Wait till next year would be, you know, next year should be the year that he really makes a difference. And then how, you know, how good are they up front is obviously a huge question too.
John in Nashville on the text line says, if you look at the schedule, there's a really good chance the Vols are undefeated going into Tuscaloosa, especially if you get by Florida in Gainesville. This is from John from Nashville on the text line. And that is the one thing about, like, their schedule this year, especially non-conference, not great for Tennessee. I mean, you've got Virginia in the first game here at Nissan Stadium, but Tennessee should destroy Virginia in that game. It's not a great non-conference schedule for the Vols this year.
Right. It's great in terms of loading up and being possibly undefeated. Yeah, I think that's definitely possible. They should win at Florida. I mean, is Florida going to be crap this year?
I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, Tennessee absolutely should be the favorite heading into Florida. You know, the one that's interesting – and without reading too much into the schedule on May the 5th before the college football season, like A&M's coming into Knoxville this year, and I have no idea what they're going to be. Like, you know, Jimbo coming in with the
Jimbo's revenge,
with the noise around that place right now, and, you know, the archaic offense that he's been running, and does he change any of that up? You know, they've got – obviously they've recruited well. They've got talent, but I have no clue what Texas A&M is going to be next year.
Yeah, no, but that is a really interesting game on the schedule because right now you look at it and it could be, here comes the circus just coming at you, just like easy money, or it could be that the remaining talent of all the talent that they've accumulated actually does something this year. So.
I will say, you know, we talk about being undefeated heading into the Bama game if you're Tennessee this year. I mean, they did just get absolutely punked by South Carolina last year, and South Carolina's got Spencer Rattler coming back, and they're coming into Neyland on September 30th. So.
Oh, that'll be a big one.
My guy Shane Beamer.
Yeah, your favorite. Devin from Dover says Thornton will be over Ramel Keaton. I know. I think a lot of Tennessee fans think that.
I don't think so.
And you know what? Look, I think Thornton could make it so, like, they have to, like, rotate four. People just disrespect Ramel Keaton. Is Ramel Keaton the NWI of the Vols?
I think Ramel Keaton's pretty good.
He is good.
Like, I'm not saying that he's, you know, a high draft pick or anything, but, I mean, watch the guy play. He just makes plays left and right.
He makes plays every time he gets an opportunity.
So I would disagree that Thornton will be in over Keaton.
But I do agree, like, Thornton's speed to me.
He'll have a role.
Yeah, and it's like, that's where it's like, okay, have a fourth guy who gets some significant snaps.
Well, and the idea of Thornton running and Squirrel White running at the same time should probably intrigue you if you're Josh Heupel, would be my guess.
Yeah.
615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Jared Stillman. We'll get into the Titans and the NFL draft with him. He's had a lot to talk about this week. We'll get into all that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.